Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, all neatly compressed into one foul, distempered listener. Welcome.
Foul, distempered listener.
And today, my dear foul, distempered listener, you have just myself, James McLean, the editor, nay King, with a K, actually with a C, Christian Corley.
Hello.
Hello. And unfortunately, we don't have with us this week again, Brian Terranova, who at this moment I am picturing sort of hanging off the very top of the Empire States Building with his sonic screwdriver pointed at the direction of Hurricane Sandy, which is a very stupid thing to do because his sonic screwdriver is just a prop and it's very dangerous up there. But hopefully he'll be all okay and everyone else will be okay because Sandy's yet to hit while we're recording this, but that's why he's not here.
Is that how you pictured it? I pictured him in a basement, in a corner, quivering, in a sleeping bag, with just some, I don't know, his sonic screwdriver to keep him company. That's how I pictured it.
Actually, I picture him in the road where there's all these cars that have been left because everyone's rushed away to hide in their basement. And he's sitting in one and he's taking photos of the car in front. Because he seems to do that a lot on Facebook. And I think when he's nervous and he's a little upset and a little worried, that's his comfort zone. So he'll be sitting there in a car, snapping one at the front, which says, I don't know, my other car is a Sidrat or something he'll have found. And
my other car's en route to the other side of the country.
Yeah. My other car's stationary in the front of a large hurricane. Why the hell are you not elsewhere? But yes, anyway, so he is along with other people are battened down for Hurricane Sandy. We, however, on the English front don't have such worries, and we can continue on with this in the main podcast, which this week is a mixture of hot topic news, is it not, Christian?
It's a mixture of hot topic news that are largely centred on one Russell Davies of Wales.
That person used to write in for us.
Yes, the same.
Until he found out that his comments were just not getting the reaction that he wanted, so he stopped writing in.
That's the fella.
That's the guy.
It's the same thing happened in Doctor Who magazine, apparently, as well. It's either a cutting or a scan of a cutting of a letter in Doctor Who magazine from the 1980s. Or perhaps even from 1979, by a Russell Davies of Glamorgan. And I don't think he's ever said it isn't him. I'm pretty certain it was him writing it. It's a very eloquent letter.
Oh, I bet you it was him.
So I think it probably was him anyway. So, yeah, Russell T. Davies is doing a big promotional tour of the newsrooms and the magazine programmes to promote his new show, Aliens versus Wizards, which, before we go on, has been misnomered on several occasions. Wizards versus Aliens, Aliens versus Wizards. I think it's Wizards versus Aliens, so I've even done it in this podcast. But in some websites and newspapers, it's Wizards and Aliens. But we're pretty certain it's Wizards versus Aliens, which starts on CBBC this week. And it's basically about wizards and aliens. I think you can guess. You just combine, say, Harry Potter with the Sarah Jane Adventures, and that's pretty much it, I think, in terms of tone and content. I mean, it's perfectly plausible concept. It's quite interesting, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And it's, as you say, if you're looking to market something in today's climate, you've got two pretty strong benchmarks still there. People still like wizards, and people seem to always like aliens, so...
Indeed, indeed. You only have to look at Saturday Night TV at the moment to see a popular wizard. I'm not talking about Simon Cowell. I'm talking about Merlin.
Yes.
Yes. Now, he has obviously been touring the newsrooms and the magazine shows, as I say, and Russell T. Davies was on the Graham Norton radio show on Saturday morning talking about Wizards versus Aliens. And Mr. Norton, who occasionally appears in Doctor Who, either intentionally or otherwise, was on the ball enough to ask Russell T. Davies about Torchwood, which finished last year It's was that the fourth series that closed last year? The Miracle,
yeah.
Which I seem to recall we enjoyed the last episode and perhaps the first couple of episodes, but the rest of it was a bit of a
meandered,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
meandered. Yeah. Yes, meandered to the conclusion.
Seems longer ago than last year. I'm quite amazed.
Yeah, well, it was last summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now on Torchwood, Russell T. Davies says, "I loved making it over there," referring to the USA, "and I would have carried on if circumstances hadn't brought me back to this country. So it's kind of in limbo for me at the moment. I'm not working on it at the moment. I'm only working on Witches vs. Aliens. When I get back to work one day, I don't know. It'll be old news to the BBC. It's not officially cancelled. It's in a nice limbo where it can stew. Those shows can come back in 10, 20 years' time." Now, well, Torchwood hasn't completely gone because there's been a couple of books out this year. There's one by John Barrowman. And there's called Torchwood Exodus Code, and I think there's been another one earlier in the year. So it's not like it's completely dead, but it isn't enjoying the same kind of limbo that Doctor Who enjoyed in terms of regular books and comic strips. Torchwood magazine went the way of the TV series.
Well, so, let's face it. I mean, Doctor Who is a different beast, isn't it?
Well,
to most shows.
It is, yes.
I mean, to be fair, I suppose you could say it's not doing badly, given that there has been no impetus or push from really from the BBC or US side of the market. I mean, the books, as I recall, I mean, the books aren't really related to anything that is suggested at the end of the American one.
No.
So it is all kept very much in the air. I don't know if I totally agree with him that it's something that he sort of contradicts himself. He says at one point that it's something he can pick up at any time. And then he also says at another point that the BBC will forget about it soon and won't know what he's talking about. So he's got a bit of a problem there. I don't think it is something that he can keep perpetually in limbo, unfortunately. I don't think it has that sort of longevity to it. In fact, I have to say, I don't know quite what it is anyway still. I think that's still one of the problems with that show, is that I just can't work out what the hell what it's really... I mean, it's not thriller, it's not sci-fi, it doesn't have any roots, does it? It's constantly changed. Every series felt slightly different,
yeah.
Especially the last two series. I think his biggest problem, if he wants to continue on with Torchwood, is actually how the hell you pitch it. What is it? Is it going to be the same as before? Because you're never quite sure what it's going to be.
Well, given what Torchwood has been in the past and what we've seen glimpses of, there's no reason why they couldn't take it in a completely different direction. So, with the success of, Big Finish are really the masters of the Doctor Who spin-off, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sarah Jane Adventures aside and Torchwood aside, they're where it's at in Big Finish. And they've had great success with Jago and Lightfoot.
Mm.
So there's no reason why Torchwood couldn't forget about all the modern day stuff and just up sticks and go back to the Captain Jack in Victorian England stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a lot more interesting potentially than what we've had with the Miracle Day series.
I could see him doing it, actually. I mean, I could see Barrowman obviously doing that. I don't think he would have any issues in coming back and doing audio plays, because as much as he's still fairly a reasonable commodity, he seems to be the sort of chap that when he loves something so much, he'll jump back and do it, no matter whether he's doing movies in Hollywood or celebrity performances here on Strictly Come Dancing or whatever he decides to do. He'll still come back and do it. So I think as long as the BBC were comfortable with that and Davis was, that could be a future outlet for it, because I just don't feel it's got the bigness to really be able to stomp back on its on our screens whenever it likes. And I think it could be a good place where it could redefine itself. Personally, yeah. I think if it was to redefine itself, its most successful, and we've said this before, was in Children of Earth, and with Hunted doing pretty well over here in the States. If you were going to remodel Torchwood, it would be possibly taking it a little more onto the spy front, and which Miracle Day sort of tried but flopped.
Spies versus aliens.
Spies or wizards, I don't mind. I would say, yeah, with a little sci-fi twist to it, I don't think that harms. But I think you can do, the X-Files did that fairly well. You can do conspiracies and spy stuff and still have a slight tapping of supernatural or sci-fi in there without it seeming ridiculous. You just got to keep it a little under at the bottom. And Children of Earth did that very well, because it wasn't really about the aliens, was it? The grand scheme it was. But on the actual surface of the stories, you very rarely saw any aliens. You didn't really deal with anything particularly supernatural. You were dealing with the human repercussions.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's where Torchwood could excel. So fingers crossed he will come back to it, and he will learn from the successes and mistakes of the past.
One of the other things Russell T. Davies has mentioned this week is concerning his involvement with the 50th anniversary. Now, last week he was quoted as saying that he hasn't got anything to do with it. Fair enough, because he's not in charge anymore of Doctor Who. He has nothing to do with Doctor Who anymore. However, it's since turned out, speaking to the Telegraph, published in today's Telegraph, that he approached BBC Books about a Doctor Who graphic novel, only to be turned down. Don't ask me about the 50th anniversary, because it's nothing to do with me, he says. I'm just a happy viewer now. This'll teach me, though. I did ask BBC Books if they fancied a graphic novel, and they went no. I sat here thinking, I could write a graphic novel, I could even draw the graphic novel, that'd be brilliant. No. There we are, then. I tried. Which... I was surprised that they said no. I was surprised that he offered. And one would think... because we know that Russell can draw. We've all seen some of his little cartoons and doodles and things, and they're a bit more than the average doodle. They're rather great little pieces. Why would they say no? I can't quite get my head around it.
No, I don't know either. I mean, I don't know whether... It's hard to be fair to them. We don't know specifically what was pitched. We don't know what their situation is at the moment. We don't even know if Stephen Moffat vetoed it. I mean, I don't mean out of nastiness, but he might have been. He is very. He seems very hands-on with Doctor Who.
And you mean, it might have been unsuitable for what they wanted for 2013.
Yes, I mean that's what I mean. I mean, it's easy just to sort of slam the BBC or slam Moffat, but there may have been justified. I mean, most things. I mean, I've said this before, but we live in jobs, don't we, where other people look in while you look out, and you see a very different picture when you're on the inside to what people see on the outside.
Yeah.
So one tries to be a little careful not to condemn BBC or Moffat or them together or as an extension, because if you don't know quite what the logistics were or even the details or what their situation is, at the same time, from a fan's point of view, I think it's a shame, and I would like to hope that they could perhaps reconsider. Because I think that would be very interesting. I mean, let's face it. You take Doctor Who. I mean, Doctor is very, very popular now. I mean, in the States, it's very, very popular. And you've got to give Stephen Moffat credit for a lot of that popularity. But Russell T. Davies did what a lot of people didn't think, including myself, could be done, and actually brought that show back for a brand new audience and perpetuated it to a point where it could be handed over. You know, I think in a lot of ways, it would be sensible that he has some involvement in the 50th, although totally understandably not direct involvement. So a graphic
novel.
So what
better way than a graphic novel?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, I'm sure if they didn't want it on anything that was canonical, and quite honestly, I don't think he'd have been pitching the Time War, which is obviously the first thing that we tend to think about.
Yeah.
I'm sure he would have done something very happily standalone. It might be something to do. Could have been something to do with the 10th Doctor or the 9th Doctor. It wouldn't necessarily even have to be interfering with the 11th, even though he does write the 11th very well. So yeah, whatever the reasons, I think it's a pity, and it's a shame as well, because it sounds like it's given him a bit of a bad taste.
Which doesn't sound good.
It doesn't sound like nepotism, but you do kind of think that if you'd been the person who had actually pretty much given the BBC on the plate this massive franchise of fantasticness, and the same to BBC Books, to be fair. You think that they would possibly consider, given that he's a top writer, bringing him on board. I doubt he was asking for vast amounts of money out of there.
It's a funny one. It makes you wonder, though, if, you know, the direction Dr. Susan is going in at the moment, and this isn't, I mean, it's completely accidental. I mean, well, partially intentional. Russell T. Davies said he didn't want to write any more Dr. Who after he'd left. And then we discovered that his take on the 11th Doctor is quite entertaining in the Sarah Jane Adventures a couple of years ago. But whether we get into a situation whereby this like big dominant writer from the show's past isn't given the chance to write for the show anymore, much in the way it's happened with Robert Holmes in the early 1980s.
Well, to be honest, I didn't really know that Robert Holmes was really pitching anything in the early 80s. That missed me totally.
I'm not sure if he was pitching actively, but I think he was basically waiting for them just to get in touch with him, because he was still working on other shows. My point really was, you know, Robert Holmes didn't do any writing. I mean, the only old writer in the John Nathan Turner era was Terence Dix, until Trial of a Time Lord. Oh, well, until Credits of Andrew Zion, and then Trial of a Time Lord, when Holmes came back into it. It's been 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012. It's been 4 years. Best part of 3 years, nearly 4 years, since Russell T. Davies wrote any Doctor Who.
Does that include Sarah Jane?
No.
Not wanting to be pedantic, but...
No, don't be pedantic.
Someone might be if I'm not.
Someone might be, yes. Hello, pedantic one. Yeah, I mean, I'm speaking specifically about Doctor Who. Of course, we can include Sarah Jane Adventures in the Doctor Who, because it's Doctor Universe, but it's not actually Doctor Who.
It was simply because the Matt Smith one, The Search for the Doctor, he wrote, was the only reason I was being pedantic. I know. I mean, Robert Holmes, he did the Two Doctors as well, if I was going
to... Two Doctors, yeah.
Before Trial of the Time Lord. But yeah, I know what you mean. It is odd. I see what you mean now. It's odd that the current team of the time... ignores certain writers from the past. I mean, Russell T. Davies, I mean, obviously Russell was very busy. I can understand that Moffat had a very clear agenda when he started taking over, that he wanted to push the show forward in a way that you'd forget really what happened before and focus on where it was going now. So I could understand why, even if Russell wanted to, he'd probably declined just simply so he could keep everyone focused on the future. But... yeah, I know. I just get a little worried about the 50th. If the 50th is just going to end up being a celebration of current Doctor Who, rather than actually acknowledging so much that has gone before to actually make the show what it is now. And I sincerely hope that's not the case. I can understand the fear of indulging too much in the past, as people criticise, as we've said before, John Nathan Turner. But that past in this case is exceptionally relevant when you're doing it, when you're talking about the, you know, 50 years of a whole show. You can't just do a Stephen Moffat story with maybe the odd monster from the past and a regeneration or something, which, you know, I could see it happening. I think it needs to be something a little more, a little more embracing of its roots. And, you know, I'd have thought on the side of it, having Russell T. Davies there on the side doing a graphic novel, I'd like to see, you know, maybe they will, maybe they'll, I'd like to see, you know, maybe, and especially in extended media, the 50th, you could do a lot of fun. I bet Big Finish will do something that's probably quite special and will relate to the 50th anniversary, though not directly to the show, and they should be. I mean, how many sci-fi shows get to 50 in the way that Doctor Who hasn't?
Yeah. There's one other. And in a different way. Although, I mean, you know, just for balance, we might be being completely unfair on Stephen Moffat here, and we might be completely over-indulging on Russell T. Davies. Because after all, Russell T. Davies did not give a chance to any of the previous writers, did he? We didn't see any Mark Platt. We didn't see any... Pip and Jane Baker, for instance. So, you know.
But we did see Graham Harper come back.
We did, indeed.
We had Paul Cornell, who was one of the New Adventures writers. Yes. He came and he did one. And, of course, he brought back the highly popular, some of the, you know, popular actors, Sarah Elizabeth Sladen, obviously. So, no, I know, I totally know what you mean. It's not like we can say categorically that if Russell T. Davies was in the position that Stephen Moffat is in now, that he would do anything different to possibly what Stephen Moffat might be considering, whatever that might be. It's not about sort of trying to damn him. I just personally think it's a shame that as a show as a whole, because this could be as much an edict or a decision by BBC Books alone, didn't have nothing to do with Moffat. You know, this could be the first thing that Moffat knows about it, reading in the Telegraph or wherever. So, yeah. It's just a shame. Whoever is involved, I think it would have been really nice to have had Russell T. Davies, who I think is a fantastic writer, very popular with kids, and and I would say is one of the, you'd have to say whether you like him or not, he has to be one of the most key, one of the key figures in Doctor Who's history now, alongside, you know, Verity Lambert and Tom Baker, and I know a lot of people hate me say, well, you know, Terence Dix, John Nathan Turner. Well, I'd say he's probably higher than John Nathan Turner, to be honest, because he's done something.
Taller, isn't he? So
he's taller, but his relevance to Doctor Who in terms of where the show has the history of it, he did, which I think very few writers could have done. So I think he's very integral to the history of Doctor Who, even though it's very recent history.
Yeah. Okay. Eagle-eyed viewers. Or eagle-eyed readers of Castorbis will notice that we've got a new review up this week of the new Doctor Who Series 7 Part 1 DVD. Now, it comes in two forms. There's obviously the DVD, and there's also the Blu-ray. Hello, James.
Hello.
And these two editions, there's a standard edition, and there's a limited edition that has a Weeping Angel sleeve. Now, there are four extras available in total. Then aren't, unfortunately, a lot to talk about if you're just getting the standard edition. You've got Pond Life, which you've probably seen online already. You've got The Asylum of the Daleks prequel, which was released online by BBC America, which you've probably seen already. And there's The Making of the Gunslinger, which is about a minute long and voiced by Adrian Scarborough, although it's directed by Neil Gorton of Millennium Effects. However, there is, on the limited edition, The Science of Doctor Who, which was one of the shows that BBC America broadcast in the run-up to Doctor Who Series 7A. And it runs to about 45 minutes. And this is the key special feature. If you're going to get a special feature with these, go for that one, because you also get a poster with that box set.
Don't want a poster.
Don't you? Okay, well, you want The Science of Doctor Who.
Do I? Okay.
You do, because it includes footage from the series, and it's there to illustrate how science is used. And it's not. I was kind of expecting it to be a bit flim-flam. I was kind of thinking they're just going to ignore stuff here, or they're not going to try and prove or disprove it either way. But they do talk about how current science and science that's sort of like possible in the future might be able to do things in Doctor Who, such as having a TARDIS, a police box is bigger on the inside than it is on the outside, that sort of thing. So it's quite good, and it covers a lot of Doctor Who.
It's good to hear that they've actually got the Pond Life, and did you say Pond Life was on there as well?
Yes.
The American trailer as well, because that was something that obviously Brian was talking about, how on previous DVDs it's been certain associated media that have gone with the series that have not been added onto DVDs. Yeah. So it's kind of cool that they've managed to put everything everything on there, so in the end that's pretty good, because it all adds up.
It does indeed. If you were watching a program called The Science of Doctor Who, do you have any particular kind of science that you'd want explaining, some kind of science from Doctor Who that you'd want explaining?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think I think there's two sciences I'd like to see explained. I'd like to see some approach to three. I think obviously the first one is regeneration. I'd like to see that explained. I would like to see block transfer computation explained, because I still find that, I find it a fascinating concept, and I know I'm sure you know Chris Bidmead understood it totally. I'm sure he understood it more than Adric, and you know, which is fine. I mean, you're pretty safe and secure with Adric, but you know, beat him at arithmetic and you're most likely to get a bottle in the face. But the third one that I would like to have done is the temporal physics, because it changes so much in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And I would like to see them. I'd like to see how science could, you know, in a really anal Doctor Who way, try and justify everything. Though, to be fair, the books do that a lot, don't they? You get a lot of books trying to explain. I mean, the New Adventures had the Web of Time, didn't they? Which has sort of been continued on. I think it was New Adventures which started that, which started to say, hey, the universe is malleable. It can change. You can break strands. There are nexus points. And the TV show seems to have picked that up from there. But yeah, I'd like to see that. Because, you know, in a way, I kind of feel that if this was explained more thoroughly, as anal as it is, I'm sure it would get rid of a lot of an angry Doctor Who fans. Because you get so many Doctor Who fans are annoyed because they did X when X happened before, or how can we have another version of Shakespeare when we've had Shakespeare in X, Y, and Z, you know? And you say, well, you know, you've got the web of time, time is changing. And if that became, you know, far more factually explained, maybe they would shut up and realize that you can't have a continuity, a perfect continuity to a show where time alters. So
they won't science, shut up.
The science of temporal mechanics, I think, is a vague. Does it deal with that at all on the making of?
I'm not telling you.
Does it deal with block transfer computation?
It definitely doesn't do block transfer.
It should, because, well, I do pretty much. I think I understand the concept of it, you know, using pure mathematics to actually shape physical form. I mean, it's such a fantastic and bold mechanic that I don't understand it in a sort of weird way, but I do understand what they're saying, and I love it, because it's the closest thing you can get to wizardry and aliens that you possibly could get to. It's fantastic.
Wizards versus aliens, in fact. Well, let's push on once more into our little surprise bit. Speaking to SFX about Wizards versus Aliens.
Surprise bit? Is this something I don't know?
Is this something?
I don't know.
No, you do know. No, you just don't know the content of it.
Oh, right. So it is a surprise. That's good.
It is a surprise, yeah. So speaking to SFX about Wizards versus Aliens, which incidentally we're not going to be covering on Cast Service because it's nothing to do with Doctor Who, other than the fact that Russell T Davies and Phil Ford are involved. Russell was asked about the use of Annette Badland in Wizards versus Aliens, who, of course, appeared as Margaret Slevin in Doctor Who. And he's asked, basically, would you be looking to cast anyone else you've used on Doctor Who, or does that begin to blur things? To which he says, yes, at least for Series 1, let's just keep a distance, is his sort of general view of it. However, he does say, Ruthie Henschel crops up as a villain, and she is so brilliant. And actually, it's funny, she'd always been on my list of Doctor Who villains. If I'd brought back the Rani, it would have been Ruthie Henschel. To which he adds, because she's just glorious, she's showbiz, and she's got that West End flair to her, but she's a properly good actor. She knows the genre.
She's fabulous. I'm sure he must have said that. He must have said fabulous.
It doesn't say that here, but he probably did.
She's fabulous.
What do you think?
I don't actually know who she is.
She's a singery, dancery, actory lady. She's quite showbiz, and she's fabulous.
But she looks quite Rani-esque. As you might want to consider a Rani.
She's one of the judges on that dancing programme at the moment, I think.
The dancing programme I don't watch?
Yeah, the one I don't watch as well, yeah. That one.
No, I wouldn't know on that. Oh, she played Roxy in Chicago. That's interesting. Well, I have to say, her filmography is, and I mean this in no rude way, but it is quite... looks quite small so far, as if you don't go to the theatre much. So
she's done more theatre than screen.
I would certainly say so. Yes.
Yes.
But no, it's an interesting. It's an interesting casting. I particularly like the fact that if he'd gone to cast someone again, it would be someone who didn't carry major celebrity headlines.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. And I have to say, Stephen Moffat's quite good like that as well. He's, while there's been some quite good popular people in there, like Simon Williams. It was Simon Williams. Is it Simon Williams?
Mark Williams.
Mark Williams. Yeah, Mark Williams. Brian.
Yeah, Brian Pond, yeah.
Yeah, Brian, Mark Williams, yeah. They're not sort of names that you would sort of carry people into a show, if you know what I mean.
You'd
watch and go, oh, that's that guy, I like him. And I think that's a very good approach. So I'm quite happy that if he'd gone with the Rani, he'd have gone with someone who wasn't a name that people would naturally assume. And who would we naturally assume to be the Rani? It's a good question. I don't know.
Well, you know, there's been this whole thing, hasn't there, since 2005 about when's the Rani coming back? From people who didn't even watch Doctor Who in the 80s asking when's the Rani coming back. Now, who is the Rani? She's a mad woman with big hair and big shoulder blades who basically made the Master impotent for a couple of years.
Yeah, well, I mean, it, to me, the Rani is basically what the Master should have been, distilled into a female character.
Yeah.
While the Master sort of descended into sort of a fairly almost pantomime character by that point.
And madness.
And madness.
Definitely madness, standing in a field all day just on the off chance the Doctor should turn up dressed as a scarecrow.
Well, he's pathetic, isn't he? By Mark and the Rani, I mean, when he's even talking to her, he sounds pathetic. And she responds to him as if he's pathetic as well, because yeah. He's just absolutely obsessed with the Doctor by this point. And it's quite a shame to watch. Mark and the Rani is quite a good episode. I quite like it. But it's not very good for the Master. And I'm always kind of pleased that Survival at least gave him a little bit of personality back before he disappeared off our screens until the movie, which actually wasn't that long after, but it was the next episode, to be fair. But it was a good send off for Anthony Ainley, where I think Mark of the Rani, he is really losing. He's having to play a character which is just losing his power. You think of even Anthony Ainley's Master in Legopolis, and he's very, very, very sinister, really. And then by Mark of the Rani, he's a bit of an idiot, really.
Yeah.
And the Rani seems to take over. But then, thanks to Pip and Jane Baker, along comes Time in the Rani, followed up by the even more successful Dimensions in Time, which pretty much signed her off, I think, to the bin. Has she been in any of the books? I can't think of many books where the Rani have been in. New Adventures, BBC books, Outside of the Lark, or even Big Finish. Is she actually another one of those embargoed ones?
Pip and Jane Baker wrote the Rani as the lead in the BBV audio drama The Rani Reaps the Whirlwind, which follows on from Time in the Rani. She also appeared as a villain in one of the Choose Your Own Adventure books, Race Against Time. She also appears in State of Change by Christopher Bulis, which was a Virgin Missing adventure.
All right, I didn't know that.
Nor did I. And she's mentioned in The Ancestor Cell.
Yeah, I've read that.
Read that as well. I don't remember the mention.
Well, I'm sure she's been mentioned in a few of them, but I mean, even in the comics, I was just reading yesterday from the library was the Complete Death's Head, Volume 2.
All right.
And even in that, there's a reference to the Rani. There's an episode. There was a Doctor Who magazine. There was a comic, I remember at the time, where he goes to a big party on this big space station, where he meets a future version of himself, which doesn't look anything like Christopher Eccleston, David Tennant, or Matt Smith, or Paul McGann. And in the menagerie of cameos in there, there's Death's Head and all sorts from the comics, Captain Britain, and there's a comment about them being at school and the Rani and her chemistry set, I think. So, you know, the Rani has appeared as namesake in more than her share, but as an actual villain, she seems to have been surprisingly not used compared to the Master. But maybe
is it really surprising? Is it just because she's crap? there's a lot more of interest about the Master and his relationship with the Doctor than there is about the Rani.
Well, I actually quite like, I think the Rani had such potential to be something very different. And maybe the reason is because of the way they strayed the Master from becoming so much of a, I would say a Moriarty, but that would be wrong, a popular vision of Moriarty rather than Moriarty as he was in the actual Sherlock Holmes books. And maybe that is the issue. When Delgado appeared as the Master, he wasn't horrendously obsessed with the Doctor. He had his own plans, and the Doctor was someone he knew, sort of vaguely irritating. And the Rani at the beginning, Mark the Rani, she was very good like that, because she was a scientist, as we know. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. She was a scientist who would perform horrific, horrific experimentations, but she had no interest whatsoever in this bloody Doctor character. No. All she was interested in was her experiments, and that sort of painted her very different to what the Master was at the time. And that sort of character could be quite interesting to bring back, someone who is very powerful, as powerful as the Doctor, the same technology as the Doctor, doing horrific things as the Master would do, but has zero interest in the Doctor at all. And he's more swatting him away than showing any interest or interest to confront.
Would it be better therefore to pitch the Rani not as a female Master, but more of a Silver Surfer or Catwoman sort of character? whose allegiance is regularly changes or completely in flux or, you know, just not certain?
Well, I would sort of put, I think obviously the Galactus is a bit of a far reaching one, but I think I know what you mean by that. I'd say she has more in relation with, say, Nazism than she does actually with the Master or any of those sort of characters. Mm. But she has that sort of the science experimental immorality.
Dr. Marauder.
Do
I mean Dr. Marauder?
Don't make me make another edit.
The guy with the animals.
But, well, she has that sort of... I think the immorality is the difference, isn't it? While the Master is evil because what he does, it tends to be self-serving and malicious and non-caring. The Rani is neither caring or non-caring. I got the impression what would make her a good villain is that she's totally coldly practical, totally amoral, that what she does for the pure fascination of science. And that could be a very interesting villain, because that villain could be doing something on a very small scale and on a very large scale. She's not there to take over the world or the universe, but she might do something which could impact the world or the universe or your street. It could be at any level. So I think she'd be a very good villain to be doing more with, just because I think she could create a different dynamic there if they used her correctly.
And not cast Kate O'Mara.
Yes, you don't cast Kate O'Mara, bless her, and you don't. And I'm sorry to keep harking on about them, but you don't get Pip and Jane. Because Pip and Jane basically did the mistake which they did with the Master. And suddenly she was massively focused on the Doctor. Okay, there was reasons within her schemes that had her interested in the Doctor. But to dress up as Mel and to try and trick him is just totally out of character for that sort of person.
Almost like standing in a field all day dressed as a scarecrow on the off chance.
He's obviously something... There's some sort of disease that he has that seems to infect others, the Master. Or maybe it's just Anthony Ainley had this disease that made all other villains camp. I don't know. But that was no reference to anything. I don't know. He seemed a lovely guy. But yeah, I think he had a lot of potential. She had a lot of potential, the Rani. And if they brought her back, that's how they should focus her on.
Okay.
Which is interesting, actually, just very quickly. So you think of the meddling monk. You think of the Rani and the Master. They do have three very distinct modes of being antagonists. I mean, the meddling monk is obviously closer to the Master, but with the meddling monk, there's no malicious, there's no evil there. He's just quite self-centered and just a bit of a pain, really, especially when you get to like the Daleks' Master Plan, where they really push that he is a very neutral, but a pain. And with the Master is obviously very self-centered and let's face it, a little bit mad. And then you have the Rani, who is very scientific and immoral. So, yeah, they could have a lot of fun with those. It's worth mentioning as well, while we're talking about the Master, there was a little bit from John Sim this week, wasn't there? Having to clarify that he had no plans for him to return, even though he would like to.
He would like to and approach the Master in a different way. Because he was basically directed by Russell T. Davies along the lines of how to characterise the Master, how to play the Master, which, I mean, a lot of people said at the time it was kind of Joker-esque, didn't they?
Yes. But I don't know. I mean, I still think there was a lot of lines there. It was the way that he played him. There was a lot of stuff that he did, a lot of lines he had, which were just totally Master.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, even down to, I mean, people say, oh, God, I hated the End of Time Part 1. But
that was genius.
That was a lot of Master in there. I could see, obviously done with a lot less, as you say, jokerisms and and hilarity. But I could see Anthony Ainley's Master doing that. I could even see Delgado's Master doing that. It wouldn't be so mad, and they wouldn't be all so crazy. And I doubt any of them would have been wearing a dress. But you know, I could see him to gain control over everything, implanting himself in everyone.
Yeah, you can just imagine it in 1980s CSO, can't you? Loads of Anthony Ainley's cackling.
I'm sure one of them would be wearing a dress. Cackling.
Yeah, it'd be wonderful. No, you're absolutely right. I agree. And I mean, I hope he does get the opportunity to return to the Master.
Yes, I do as well. Even if it's just for a generation.
Yeah.
I think people got to remember that he was the master for a new generation as well. He wasn't just... He'll have brought the master to a new set of people. So to them, he'll be as quintessential as Delgado is to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Our group. Or Anthony Amy is. Or Eric Roberts.
Well, he always dresses for the occasion. No, but if they do bring him back, I personally would not like to know about it beforehand.
You'd like to be surprised.
I definitely want to be surprised. I want a surprise of the scale. No, I want a bigger surprise than Rose appearing at the end of Partners in Crime. I want a surprise of David Tennant being cast as the 10th Doctor proportions that we unfortunately did know about but shouldn't have known about.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we had a surprise. The only surprise I almost got and I lost was in the Doomsday at the end of Army of Ghosts, where we're about the Daleks come out the sphere.
Yes.
And unfortunately, Boomtown had that on their trailer. So people on the forums, even though I didn't watch the trailer, had headlines saying, oh my God, the Daleks are going to appear out of the sphere. And, you know, oh, thank you. Because that, to me, would have been a fantastic surprise. You've got all these Cybermen. So you're thinking Cybermen, end of the episode, out come a Dalek. And you think, wow, that's cool. But no.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Actually, I was so annoyed the previous year with all these nonsense about, you know, Norman Lovett cast as Davros, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That I just basically ignored everything. It's not that I didn't read anything. I did read a lot, but I just disregarded it all because I was pretty much certain that no one knew. So although I had seen that the Daleks were in it, I had no idea that the Daleks were in it. If you're with me.
But if you watched the trailer, you would have. That was the problem. It was their next week trailer. Stupidly.
Yeah, but I didn't watch it.
Well, I didn't, and then I went onto the forums. And I think it was one of those times again on the forums where someone had put us a header. Hey, what about? And you think, oh, hey, what about what? And they go, hey, what about that trailer where there was Daleks? And that was your first point. You think, why the fuck did you do that?
Yeah.
And I'll probably have to edit that out as well. But there we go.
I'll leave it in. It's okay.
Why did they do that? Why do you do that?
I don't know.
Why? Because that would have been such a cool thing to being surprised for once.
I think it's for the Radio Times, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because they had Daleks and Cybermen on the front cover. They had like two different covers. I know this because I've been through my Radio Times this week in order to box them up.
So they probably...
Radio Times.
Oh, we've blown it anyway. We've had to blow it anyway for this Radio Times promo, so we might as well just blow it up.
Quite possibly. I did, of course, mean the island of Dr. Moreau earlier. The island of Giorgio Moroder. I'm getting my classic movies mixed up.
Yes, but no, that is actually a very good comparison.
Yeah.
I got the right name.
Yes, indeed. So moving on from Electric Dreams, that brings us to the end of this week's podcast with a K. We'll be back next week, hopefully with a restored Brian Terranova at full strength. But until then, bye-bye.